I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode of the Cult Pop Show podcast was brought to you by our Patreon.
If you want to tell us which films we should watch, get up to 2 extra exclusive podcasts a month, give us something to talk about in the post-credit scenes at the end of each episode, or even contribute to the discussion in the episode itself, then please consider joining the cult and donating at www.patreon.com/cultpopshow.
Richard, you sick son of a bitch. We're back here again. Welcome.
Bonjour. Thank you for joining us, or should I say, thank you for doining us.
Doing. Welcome to Film Franchise Fortnights on the Cult Pop Show podcast, everybody. I'm AJ, joined by Richard. This is a podcast where we cover a different film franchise every fortnight. And this fortnight, we covered something a little bit French. This is not our first French exploration on the show.
Lady and the Tramp.
The Lady and the Tramp, of course. I'm, of course, referring to Lady and the Tramp. A series, I'm pretty sure, set in, like, New York. I don't think that's...
There's a Parisian scene.
Is there?
Yeah, I guess it's the, the famous scene is at a Parisian restaurant, isn't it? Although they do, they are eating Paschetti, so who knows? And that's the thing, is that, like, no one will ever know.
this fortnight we were given from our lovely patrons the Adventures of Antoine Doinel, or as we soon found out, Doinel, because of course it's Doinel. Antoine has O-I in it, and we pronounce that fine. We get to Doinel, and we're like, yeah, that's how it'll be pronounced, Doinel. This French, the most beautiful language ever. It's like, yeah, it's Antoine Doinel.
I knew that would be wrong. I just... How much is Doinel to say, though?
That's true. The Adventures of Antoine Doinel refer to 4.5 movies directed by François Truffaut. François, you want to give it a go? How would you say it?
François Truffaut, yeah.
François. He directed them between 1959 and 1979 and followed the life and times of the titular character, Antoine Doinel, portrayed in all 4.5 films by Jean-Pierre Lourde at pretty different stages of his life in what is, I guess, a proto before trilogy or a proto boyhood in a lot of ways. It's very clear that a lot of directors were directly inspired.
A lot of Doinheads,
absolutely. The films include the influential French New Wave film The 400 Blows in 1959, the short film Antoine and Colette, which was part of a larger 1962 anthology film called Love at 20, in which Truffaut was joined by directors Andrzej Wajda, Renzo Rossellini, Shintaro Ishihara, and Marcel Ofels, all from different countries, and each who contributed a love story from a different part of the world. So I didn't watch any more of Love at 20, but it sounds pretty cool. So then we've got Stolen Kisses in 1968, Bed and Board in 1970, and Love on the Run in 1979, all of which chronicle Antoine's journey into adulthood and the tragically misguided ways in which he sabotages all of his relationships. Like many franchises we find ourselves covering these days, the Adventures of Antoine Doinel was the result of like a year-long campaign from patron Dave Cross, who I'm sure will appreciate a shout out because he was going ham suggesting this every fortnight.
Shut up about it. He said he would send me a postcard if it won. And then, do you know what? Didn't give him my address.
He mentioned a few times when he would suggest it that he wanted to hear more episodes about filmy films like we did for the Three Colors trilogy or the Before trilogy. And while Antoine Doinel, I think, has a few more ups and downs, this is definitely a franchise that is one of those that's like buzzing with authenticity and craft. Francois Truffaut, one of the best directors ever made, whose films of which I've seen include these five and no others. So it began with the lauded 400 blows in 1959. This was Francois Truffaut's directorial debut and is widely considered his best film and one of the best films of all time, which would bum me out, to be honest with you, if my first, if my feature was...
I think Romantic Getaway is your best.
Well, that's not a feature film. You got to wait till I make a feature film.
It's also not your best.
It's also not my best. It's also not my debut short film either.
Yeah.
What do you think this has? What do you think the 400 blows has on Rotten Tomatoes?
98%.
Go higher, bro. 99%.
Wow.
It is 400% on Rotten Tomatoes. What is the 400 blows about? Which isn't an easy question to answer when usually our answers are like, it's about a bunch of teenagers who are running around in a maze and the world's ended.
Usually you know? That's my answer.
Well, they're usually that caliber of film. Yeah, you know?
Usually that's my answer. And it took, what, like 6 years to actually be relevant to the film. So yeah, it's a it's about this little boy, and he's
maybe
had like 300 399 blows so far, and this kind of details his 400th, and yeah, it's a misunderstood adolescent in Paris, and it's sort of just kind of split into two halves. One is just like he's struggling at school, he struggles with his parents and stuff, and then he gets sent to like a observation center for troubled youths, it's called. Yeah, it's just, it's one of these sort of, I guess, probably more relevant for the, well, I mean, it's still relevant now, but like relevant for the time about this, the system not supporting people who are different. Obviously is still a very prescient issue.
Yeah, crazy. A 1959 film talks about like such a relevant thing. And but I feel like I say that quite a lot. I feel like I'm always watching old films these days and being like, God, this was an issue back then as well. That's crazy. Yeah. So what did you think of it? What did you think of the 400 blows?
So I've been wanting to watch this movie for a while. It's in my... I've actually just, after watching the film, went back through my copy of 1001 Movies to See Before You Die. It's got a checklist at the front of it that I did, you know, some years ago and then did again.
Oh, cool.
A few years later. And just so it's just fun to, you know, I forget about it for like 5 years at a time. And I go through and I checked off maybe, you know, 40 new ones just the other couple of days ago. Yeah, so and there's a Childish Gambino lyric that refers to it. Let me pull it up. It's in That Power, which is the final song on Camp, which I listened to the other day. I messaged you about this, and it's so strongly linked to a time in my life, the album Camp, when it first came out, that I put it on when I was at the supermarket, and it actually freaked me out. Because it actually just transported me to a different time so clearly that I was like, I actually can't listen to this because it's too freaky. Uncool, but lyrically, I'm a stone cold killer, so it's 400 blows to these true foe.
Ah, very clever. Donald.
But yeah, using true foe as like real fake. True foe as in fake.
I thought as in like friend or foe, like my true, my ultimate enemy, my arch nemesis.
I think it's it probably has multiple meanings.
Oh, there we go. Just like the works of Francois Truffaut.
Yeah, and so I had no idea what the film was about. It's this weird thing where I didn't realize, and this is going to sound stupid. I knew the final shot of the film, which is this famous shot of like a young boy looking into the camera, and I knew that he was... And I guess I knew that he was the main character of the film. I didn't realize the film was about a young kid. Like, for some reason, those two things never occupied my mind at the same time. And so I always assumed the 400 blows was like a French crime film or like a noir.
It does sound like that.
Whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, so to find out that it was actually like, yeah, and I found out a wee while ago that it's like this coming of age French New Wave film. Like, it piqued my curiosity. And, you know, when Dave started suggesting it for the Patreon, looking into it, I was like, yeah, I've been wanting to cover my boy Doyne for a while now.
Doing.
And yeah, it is one of those, there's a few things you can go through when you watch one of the greatest films of all time, quote. And some of them, it's like, I'll give an example, like 12 Angry Men is one that I watch and I'm like, this shit is fire. You know, like that I watch and I'm like, yeah, this still is one of the greatest films of all time. There's some that you're like, oh, this just like does not do it for me. This just does not hold up at all anymore.
I can give you examples.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example. I reckon I've got to be like the world's leading, and we've covered this on the podcast, the world's leading hater of the Seven Samurai. I just never want to watch it again. I've only ever seen, this is probably why, I've only ever seen it twice. Once because I had to watch it for my movie club that I was running for a couple of years, and no one else watched it and no one else talked about it, and it felt like a fucking waste, and I had to like devote 3 hours of my time to watching it. And once for the podcast, which I don't know if you remember, I really didn't want to watch it, and we watched it together actually at your parents' house. And like, it's just, it's one of those, these movies where it's like everything this is influenced is great, except maybe The Magnificent Seven. But watching the actual movie, it's just, it didn't offer anything new to me, at least when I last watched it. And maybe I have a bit more appreciation for the craft of filmmaking now. But contrastingly, 12 Angry Men, Casablanca, these are, you know, best movie of all time trademark that I agree with.
But something like The 400 Blows, I am like, it's somewhere in the middle where it's like, yeah, I can see why you take away the last 65 years of movies. I can see why this is the best of all time.
Yeah.
there's obviously still going to be this attachment to it from filmy people. And, you know, a lot of directors consider it one of their favorite films. And I think the fact that it's about a child is kind of also a little unique. But that it's, I don't know. It didn't, I was hoping this series would like really, really grab me like the Three Colors trilogy did, or like Before Sunrise did. But yeah, I was just like, oh yeah, I get this. I get it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think, yeah, I was just never quite got in by the trials and tribulations of Anton Doyle.
Yeah, well, because it's one of these movies where, like, if I was to show, like, a friend of mine who wasn't into movies, if I was to show them, like, 12 Angry Men, no, 12 Angry Men, I think they would enjoy it. If you showed this to someone today, like, just a basic person, I think they'd be like, this isn't about anything. There's nothing happens, you know? And that's
Iron Man.
Yeah, where's Iron Man gone? He was here a minute ago. I think, like, to me, I liked it, and I can, I feel like it's a movie that would, I would find more enriching if I, the longer I've stayed with it, I think, and seeing it as like a movie about like the failure of the system to look after our children is very interesting to me. And
well, after French children,
That's true. And watching the rest of the series, the 400 Blows hangs over these movies, both in the sense that they're not as good as the 400 Blows, and that
it's also like the series is about something completely different.
That's true. But what I guess I'm saying is like it provides a context to the character of Antoine Doinel that makes those movies better than they would be movie didn't exist, you know, because you understand who he is. And so if anything, this is kind of a perfect franchise to cover for Film Franchise Fortnights, right? Because it is about a franchise. Like, it is about a, it is, it only, you can watch the 400 Blows and that can be the only one you watch, but if you watch the whole series, it is a series that is so beholden to its sequels, both to come and the movies before it, in a way that was more so than I expected. Because when I started, I'm not jumping ahead yet, but when I started Stolen Kisses, what is this? I was kind of expecting it to be more like, it's sort of a franchise. It's more, it's like how Machete appears in Spy Kids, and then there's a Machete movie. Like, it's more like Francois Truffaut just liked reusing this character, but you can watch any of these by themselves and they'll stand alone. That is not the case. Definitely not. I think you have to watch the short film that we nearly didn't watch to fully understand.
Well, you definitely have to watch the short film, but I think you could pretty easily leave the 400 blows off.
But I'm saying, like, the 400 blows is what makes you more endearing, well, what makes the character more endearing to you, or at least it did for me.
Yeah, I wasn't super endeared to him anyway.
I watched the first 30 minutes of this movie about 6 weeks ago, when I thought that French New Wave was going to win the $1 genre poll. For those that don't know, I have a little side hustle called $1 Genre where I make a short film based on a different genre.
But they have been good since this first one.
Voted on by a Patreon, and French New Wave was looking to win the month that we're currently in until it was pipped at the post by Public Domain. And so I got too tired watching this movie. I watched 30 minutes of it and then turned it off because I needed to go to sleep. And then, like, never watched the rest of it because French New Wave didn't win the poll. And I was like, well, I don't need to see the influence now. And I stopped watching it just after Antoine spies his mum kissing another guy in the street. And boy, did I think that was going to be a more prominent plot point. I thought that was like the inciting incident. And the movie was like, what's the 400 blows about? It's about a young boy who learns his mother is
has been giving being it 400 unfaithful. Blowjobs.
Yeah, well, maybe. Who knows? Yeah. It is so not about that. It's like a drop in the bucket of what the movie is about, which is just about this kid with this sort of messed up life that he continually fails to resolve and understand. And then he escapes the like essentially juvie that he gets put in by his parents. He escapes and makes it to an ocean where he can't go anywhere. And it's sort of, it's very French, you know, it's very like...
Well, there's the famous final shot of the film, which he's running, he's always wanted to see the ocean, gets to the ocean, and he turns around and the camera freezes and then, like, I guess not digitally, but digitally zooms in on his face, where he has this kind of blank expression, and it's kind of supposed to be like a... You project whatever you're feeling onto him. It's like you don't actually know how he's feeling. Is he happy he's finally made it out? Is he disappointed by what the ocean has been? Yada, yada. And yeah, it's interesting because there's a few like editing issues I noticed across all these five films. None like super specific to bring up, but just that like when you've worked as an editor, you notice little editing quirks. And yeah, it's a really weirdly edited thing that it's like just this freeze run that just comes out of nowhere and then this really clunky zoom in done in post. And yeah, to know that that's considered one of the greatest film endings of all time is like probably revolutionary at the time, but it's, you know, like I watched this, I rewatched it after this, but Cinefix, which is a great YouTube channel, which does like the top five shots of all time. And but what their video is doing is like, okay, well, what's the best wide shot of all time? What's the best extreme close-up of all time? And they'll go through each of them. And it's a fantastic YouTube channel. Their lists are amazing. And you'll be introduced to lots of like French New Wave type films that you've never heard of. But their best ending of all time, number two, is a freeze frame ending. And they don't even explain what a freeze frame ending is. They don't even give any honorable mentions. They just go, how could it be anything other than the 400 blows?
Right. And you disagree?
Oh, I'm just like, I don't know. I mean, Prisoner of Azkaban's got a pretty good one. no, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm still thinking about it. I'm still trying to decipher it. But it's so jarring. And it's such a like odd choice because it's a very quick zoom in as well. So like
I read a interpretation online when I was researching and it was written like it wasn't an interpretation. It was written like this is just what the ending is. It's supposed to be that he's been caught.
No.
That like you are the truancy officer or whoever.
Right. No, I don't like that.
I got a question for you though. And this is something that I've been asking since last month. What is French New Wave? Can you describe
so,
it to
no,
me?
No, this, this is the no thing. One... This is the thing.
Yeah?
Sorry, you were about to talk. Can...
Well, it's just no one really explained it to me. The Wikipedia page doesn't have like a basic rundown of it. I've since researched what it is, but I'm interested to see if you can explain it to
well,
me.
Well, see, this is like, this is not what I thought French New Wave was. Like...
Right.
The 400 Blows more than the other ones, but it's like, the other ones are like, these are just movies. They just happen to be in French. There's nothing...
Yeah.
Like, yeah. But I was expecting a real, you know, like, takes a long drag of a cigarette.
There's like a red balloon that's in color, even though the rest of the movie's in black.
Looks
and white.
Off into the distance.
Yeah. Je ne sais pas. The example I think of is that scene in 500 Days of Summer, where it does essentially a parody of French New Wave, and he's like, you know, like he's playing chess with someone on the beach, and then he's like suffering so much suffering. Like that's what I thought.
Yeah,
French
or
New
like
Wave was.
Yeah. When I think of like Enchant Andalou. An Andalusian dog, the movie with the razor blade across the eye, which I don't even think is a free. But then it's just like, oh, this is just a movie about, you know, could be about anything.
So my what I've discovered from looking into this and being and sort of like not really ever thinking about French New Wave and then suddenly have it thrust upon me before it was quickly ripped away in favor of a different genre, is that it's not really a genre. And I've realized now that if we had gotten French New Wave for $1 genre, what I would have was actually being asked to make was more like a parody of French New Wave.
Yeah.
Because what you're thinking of when you think of it as a genre, that's just what movies looked like.
Yeah.
And they happened during the French New Wave. Because what, according to a video I watched last night, what the French New Wave actually is considered to, like, what people say it, like, brought into the fold, among other things, was the idea of the auteur director. Because before this, films were held up, like, marketed on their actors and their production or their producers or their production companies. So I think that the biggest signpost of French New Wave is a strong directorial voice, which I would hope all my films have. And it doesn't have to be black and white or French. I guess it has to be French because it's French New Wave. But like Wes Anderson is what you would call a French New Wave inspired director. But at the same time, like, so is Christopher Nolan. Anyone, it's auteur is basically before the 400 Blows, the like films were like, they were big wide open shots where it was essentially plays being filmed. And stuff like the 400 Blows and like Agnes Varda and stuff, they, like Cleo from 5 to 7 or Breathless or other ones I've seen thrown around. These are movies in which it was believed philosophically that the director should be communicating a message from their soul. And that is just most like big films now. And so, it wasn't what I expected to say. I was looking for like, what are some tropes of French New Wave? What are some elements and conventions when you do genre studies in high school? That's what they name the elements and conventions. And it's like, this doesn't have any. It's not a genre. It is in its name a wave. It's a trend.
That's good because I didn't support that wave of votes on your $1 genre Patreon and. Yeah, I'm glad it didn't win. So, also, sorry, Enchant Andalou is a French film. It's Salvador Dali, so.
Ah, nice. That's probably not French New Wave, but
it's 30 years before, but that's the idea. I said before, I'm not sure if it's French, and I just wanted to a little correction before anyone's like, hey, you dumb cunt.
Yeah, they'd be like, this film is, how you say, obviously French. we talk about titles a lot on this podcast, Richard, and The 400 Blows is a particularly interesting title because why the fuck is it called that? It doesn't come up. There's a bit where they're blowing spitballs from a window.
I was like,
is this it? Is this why? Like, are they going to blow 400 of these? But you've got... Well, Something happened between us this week about titles that I think you would like to share.
Well, so you've been on
because
like...
I didn't think anything of it, and then you were like, I need to talk about this.
So, I mean, I looked up, you know, you get a film called The 400 Blows, and I looked this up years ago. Why is it called, you know, why is it called The 400 Blows? And it's, I mean, it kind of like we spoke about last week. I mean, it's a literal translation of the French title, but it doesn't actually really keep the meaning. The French colloquialism is to like to raise hell. I sort of interpret it to mean like with the in the same way that the Scorch Trials could be called the 400, the Scorch Tribulations. This could be called the 400 Trials and Tribulations. It's just like But so
the French title is Faire les quatre cents coups, which, as you say, means to raise hell. And on one of the first prints in the United States, they tried to retitle the film Wild Oats, but they did not like that. I think that's a pretty good title, to be honest.
And then Royal and literal- Oats, the Coming to America, could have been a... a play on that.
Yeah. A literal translate, like if you were to, you know, try and keep the meaning of the French expression, you would get something more akin to do the 400 dirty tricks. So I guess it's like 400's a relatively arbitrary number. Yeah. It's like someone who does 100
dirty deeds.
Dirty deeds, yeah.
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 Can I get your pronunciation of the French title again?
Faire les quatre cents coups.
Well, thank you for that. I always love when there's foreign words, because you put on an accent, but I feel like the pronunciation is never quite there.
Thank you so much. So what happened? You
went through a phase this week where you decided, I guess, to make your personality be jokes about Googling why it's called The 400 Blows. Like,
I did like two things.
Yeah, so you like you messaged me about it, and then your review for it was like joining the ranks of people, you know, whatever,
Googling why it's called that.
But the thing, you sent me a meme of...
Explain the meme format first.
So it's Peter Griffin running towards the camera in a parody of North by Northwest with a plane chasing him. It's a screenshot from there. And it says, do not Google why it's called The 400 Blows. Worst mistake of my life. There's a watermark that says imageflip.com. And on its own, a pretty funny shitposty meme.
Because you're familiar, obviously, with the format that... Do not Google what this dinosaur is called. And it's called like it sounds like the N-word, basically.
Right, yeah.
So be like, do not Google what the dinosaur that lived between these times was called. Worst mistake of my life.
Yeah.
And it's sort of an exaggerated,
Yeah, but the thing about this...
Are you picturing it, listeners? Are you picturing the meme?
Yeah.
Sound out on the Discord, say, send the meme, AJ, and I'll send it to the Discord.
We'll send the meme, Richard. I also have access to it.
Yeah, that's true.
But the thing was that I was like... I said, yeah, like, I've already looked it up. And you were like, oh, have you? And you're like, oh, and I was like, yeah. And I was like, yeah, sure. And you said... Oh, I just thought it'd be a cool thing for only one of us to know on the podcast. Which, like, the thing that... And I said to you last night that we need to talk about this meme because it's ruined my life. Is that, like, I haven't stopped thinking about this since Tuesday when you sent me it. Is that, like, this was a genuine attempt to dissuade me from Googling it. That's the thing that baffles me. That you were, like, you could have messaged me and said... Hey, don't look it up. I want to reveal it and we'll have a conversation about it. Okay, cool. Which we've done before. We've said, hey, don't Google this, and that's fine. But
worst mistake of my life.
But sending me a meme, which is traditionally used to encourage you to look something, to make you do a bit of work to see a dirty word or something like that. And I haven't stopped thinking of it. Ask me what I know about the other four films, or three and a half films. It's fuck all, because I've been so distracted since Tuesday. thinking about this, and you mentioned the other day that you were like, I don't think there's been a night in the last week that I haven't been high. And I was like, okay, that does give me a little bit of context, because I can understand high AJ thinking like, oh, I remember I need to tell Richard not to look this up. Oh, there's a funny meme format about not looking stuff up. I'll do that. But man,
no, like, I sent this- you at about 11 a.m. So that theory's out the window.
Well, I wouldn't put it past you.
Do you want to know the truth? Do you want to know why I sent you that?
What I'm guessing is you put so little thought into it and you didn't really care about whether or not I looked it up or not.
Which, yes, and I would argue, very French of me. I think that's a very French attitude towards and maybe I should adopt that more and be more sort of like cavalier, which I reckon is probably a French word about what does or does not get looked up by you for episodes I'm emceeing. Yeah, man, like I was just like, I was going to message you. I looked up why it was called that. I was going to message you and be like, hey, don't look it up because it'll be cool to talk about. And then I was like, oh, there's that meme and Richard loves Peter Griffin. Oh my God. I'll just do that instead. I was trying to make you happy and I ruined your life. It happened to me a lot.
Yeah, just like, because I didn't think about it at all. I was like, oh, this is AJ's joke today, is talking about Googling the 400 blows and why it's called that. But then to find out like 6 hours later that you didn't want me to look it up, that's what that, it, oh my God. I haven't eaten. I haven't slept.
So according to IMDb, you know that scene where Antoine is being interviewed at the like the center he gets sent to, and they're like, are you a liar? Your parents say that you lie a lot, and he's like, oh sure, I lie sometimes, but people don't believe me. And then they're like, have you had sex with a woman? And he's like, no, but I know some people who have, and I once was introduced to a sex worker who was into guys my age. It's a real weird question. That's all true. That's Jean-Pierre Lourdes being interviewed for a screen test for his audition for the 400 blows. Wow. With Francois Truffaut's voice edited out of it and a female voice put in it, which is like, oh cool. And then you remember what he's talking about and you're like, oh, that's kind of grim that they used that.
Do not Google behind the scenes of that scene. Worst mistake of my life.
Yeah. So before we move on, we sometimes forget to do this segment, and I think there's never been a podcast or a Film Franchise Fortnights episode more asking of this question. And that question is French-wise. Like, why would you...
France-wise.
French-wise.
French-wise.
Why would you make a sequel to this, let alone a whole bunch? Yeah. Like, so, it's crazy. Like, especially because the ending, that famous ending, it's one of these endings where it's like, if you expand on this, you ruin the mystique. Mm. Like, we talked about this before, about like how, like, if the you know, many, many failed Casablanca sequels that have tried to exist throughout the years, like, they would ruin the, like, richness and ambiguity. It's like if there was a sequel to Inception where it confirmed if the top fell over or not. It's like, no.
Yeah, or like a sequel to Blade Runner.
Which
fucking nails the ambiguity. Oh, it's so good.
well, that's what I would say. Like, it nails it. Like, but you know, more often than not, sequels to movies with ambiguous endings don't work. I'd say Blade Runner 2049 and the Watchmen TV show are the only two examples I can think of where, like, following up. And even Watchmen, I think, actually, like, weakens the... I like it a lot, and I think it the show itself has a great ending, but the way it deals with the ending of the comic book, I think, weakens the comic book's ending. Wow. But yeah, this is one of these examples where it has such an impactful, powerful thing.
From what I understand, this is semi-autobiographical, and Wikipedia says, like, on the Wikipedia page for... the character of Anton Doinel. It says, Doinel is to a great extent an alter ego for Truffaut. They share many of the same childhood experiences, look somewhat alike, and are even mistaken for one another on the street. It's like, that's not true. And they looked at what he looks like and damn, he looks exactly like Doin.
Yeah.
but
Francois Doinel.
But it's also like, the fictional character of Antoine Doinel can't be recognized on the street.
They're true.
Yeah, which is because, yeah, I was like, what is wrong with that sentence that makes me think it's weird? It's that. But yeah, that it's this somewhat autobiographical thing. And then, because when was Love at 20? That was only like a couple of years later, right?
1962.
Yeah. So that was the one that's like, I imagine he was asked, hey, do you want to contribute to this thing? And, you know, essentially just being like, oh, hey, this character I made that's kind of based on me. Well, like thinking about, okay, what do I think about Love at 20? Oh, well, this thing happened to me. And while I've already created a character who's autobiographical, I'll use him again. I liked working with that actor. It'd be fun to see him grown up. And then, you know, once you got two under your belt, it's so easy to do more and more. Yeah. But I feel like unless you have the answer and you're telling me I'm wrong, but
no, you've actually speculated almost exactly the correct answer.
Yeah. I just feel like his appearance in Antoine and Colette would be more or less like, you know, not very well thought out. And then once you've got there, it's like, well, you know, now let's go from here.
Yeah. So in his book, Truffaut on Truffaut, Truffaut said, for my part, the French episode, so the episode of, that's the first episode of, or the first story in Love at 20, the French episode gave me the occasion to realize a project I hadn't dared to launch on my own, a short sequel to my first film, The 400 Blows, in which we would meet up with a young Antoine Doinel 3 years later, having his first sentimental adventure, one that would illustrate the moral, you risk losing everything by wanting it too much.
Ooh.
Ooh! Oh, story of my French little life, Richard. Do you know how badly I want this podcast to be listened to by thousands of people? I want it too much. And, you know, I hazard to bring this up because I'm worried about this becoming part of my personality. But
but don't Google why it's called...
So in the past 2 years, or year and a half, since I've been making my own, trying to make my own stuff, and, like, I didn't do this. This wasn't something I intended to happen, but, like, I've kind of found my directorial voice a lot more than I was expecting to. And, like, what started as a project on the side to be creative ended up being something that, like, I found a lot of myself in and, like, learned a lot about myself, right? And fuck, I relate to this idea of being like, I really want to revisit this thing I made, but not in my case, but in Truffaut's case, like this influential movie that everyone's like, this is one of the best movies ever made, and wanting to revisit that, but not wanting to ruin the mystique. And a short film sequel is the perfect way to do that, because it's not, you can just be like, oh, it's just a bit of fun, it's just good for a giggle. And I read a review, I think, on Letterboxd for Love on the Run, or one of them, that talked about how, like, the sequels are all inferior, and it said, like, if he'd stopped after Antoine and Colette, it would just be this, like, weird little anomaly in his filmography that, like, oh, did you know, did you know that there's actually a short sequel to The 400 Blows? And I thought, like...
Podcasts would be shorter.
Yeah, that's true. I really liked Antoine and Colette from 1962, also directed by François Truffaut. And I think it's it's different. It's a different medium, so it's hard to compare it. But I probably preferred this to The 400 Blows. What do you think it has on Rotten Tomatoes?
Does it have its own score?
It does not have its own score. It has a page, but no Rotten Tomatoes score. Apparently, Love at 20... the French one, so Antoine and Colette, and the last one, which I think is
Japanese.
No, maybe. Apparently, the first one and the last one are like apparently the only ones worth watching, or at least those are the standouts. I think that's such a cool idea for a film, and I actually want to go and watch it properly.
There's a bunch of films like that.
Okay, never mind then. what is Antoine and Colette about? It's what, 30 minutes long?
Antoine sees this girl at a play, thinks she's hot, so he stalks her, and then she friend zones him.
And man, what did you think of?
Man, look, we've all been there.
No, again, I guess like I've read a lot of, like, for a character I didn't know existed 2 months ago. I've learned a lot about young Antoine and the influence, and like people saying like, God, Timothée Chalamet owes his fucking career to Jean-Pierre Lourdes. Like this, he's such a Timothée Chalamet character, especially in this one. And again, in the same way that like the 400 Blows is about a surprisingly pertinent subject matter, like, fuck, this is like a movie from 1962 eloquently and in an enlightened way tells a story about quote-unquote friend zoning, in which it criticizes the male character for his behavior, which is something movies didn't do again for 50 years. Like, where, you know, like I thought that was so interesting that we had a not necessarily feminist, but like a sympathetic to the pursued woman look at this sort of thing, because Antoine looks like a fucking fool in this movie. Yeah. I think like it's not at all very like you know, like Truffaut said, it's about wanting something, losing everything by wanting it too much. And there's a moment at the start, it's got a narration, which is the only one that has a narration, and there's a moment at the start where he's like says goodbye to Colette, and as he walks away it says something like, Colette only thought of him as a friend.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Which Antoine was either unaware of or in denial about. It's just something like that. And then, the whole movie is just basically him calling her up and her very clearly not wanting to like over, and she, you know, she could be a bit more tactful about it sometimes. Like at one point he's like, oh, shall I come over? We were going to meet at this movie. Where were you? And she's like, oh, me and my friend stayed up till 5 a.m. getting drunk. And he's like, oh, well, do you want to meet up today? And she's like, yeah, come over. I might be there, but I'm going to meet up with my friends again. And then he goes and she's not there. God, Richard, that's so close to several things that have happened to me.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm glad you said that, because like, without sounding like a dick, I like this one, probably not as much as you. I think part of that is I think you probably found this a little more relatable than I did.
Oh, absolutely. This series starts out as...
I am Antoine Doinel.
No, but in like, oh, that's cool. I kind of get this character. I understand it. And then by like the end of Stolen Kisses, I'm like, oh my God, I'm Antoine Doinel. Like, I'm an
He's
archetype.
He's literally me.
That, but in a bad way. Like, I'm an archetype that has been criticized, Richard, since 1959. People have been making fun of dudes like
me. I've been a punchline for 60 years.
Before I was born. So like I just thought it was so interesting to see a film like again with such modern ideas, and like there's a bit where the ending of this film is like, and like he moves across the street from her trying to be, you know, trying to get closer to her. He befriends her parents, and like I don't know if I've befriended a crush's parents before, but I've certainly like made friends.
Tried
with,
to.
No, I don't think I have, but I think I can't think of a specific example, but it just sounds like something I've done. I've like become friends with their friends as a way to try and get them to feel like they are more closer to me than they really want to be, or something like that. I haven't done this in a long time, but it's something that...
Yeah, it's been a couple of weeks.
It's been a couple of weeks. And
I've been busy with shooting this month's $1 genre, so I haven't been able to do this for a while.
Yeah. So I like, it ends with he goes around to her house and her parents are so happy to see him, and then he's like, shall we go out? And she's like, no, I've got plans. And he's like, what are your plans? She's like, I'm not telling, which is like, God, when you like someone and they have plans and they don't tell you what it is. God. And then a guy comes over named Albert and she goes out with him, and it ends with Antoine Doinel watching TV with this crush's parents who like him, and it's so fucking relatable, Richard.
I didn't really like the song because I thought it was so unrealistic.
I have been the guy who has gone like a couple extra lengths because I've liked someone, and in essence ended up watching TV with their parents. Like, yeah, I've been situation.
Albert.
Yeah, I'm sure you have. All right, buddy, we get it. Like, I don't know. I just found it so profound to me to see such an old movie relay some of the worst experiences of my life back to me. I really liked it, but yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, it was good. I mean, I also think that it's like, just by virtue of being 30 minutes, it's like, I mean, although I do love a short runtime. And true. I found that the remaining three hard to get through because of timing.
Yeah. Well, Stolen Kisses came out in 1968. Guess who was directed by Richard? It was directed by Francois Truffaut.
Oh, Jean-Luc Godard.
What do you think this has on Rotten Tomatoes?
Like 70%?
No, it's pretty high, man. It's got 97% on Rotten Tomatoes. Oh, wow. Quite, like, all five of these films are in the Criterion Collection.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, maybe not the most.
Yeah, so is The Rock.
What is Stolen Kisses about?
He first meets and starts his relationship with the would-be love of his life, or who is featured in the next two films.
Christine?
Oh, Christine. And yes, he starts off in the army, which is sort of, I guess, continuation from the 400 Blows, but then he's not really like in that and Antoine and Colette, so.
Hmm. Well, in Antoine and Colette, it says he was collected again by the same people he ran away from and then now lives a solitary life as a 17-year-old. And this is when he's 19, 20?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and he's like a private detective and stuff. This one lost me a bit. This
So, yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about following up this understated film about the failures of society treating our children with, like, and now he's a private detective. Like, yeah, it was like, yeah. It's all right on its own. And again, if you hadn't seen, if this was just a standalone movie, I don't think it's necessarily that bad. The joke is that he can't keep a job. He can't keep, like, he keeps screwing up jobs, and then a private detective he has a run-in with a private detective who gets him to get hired by his agency. He's really bad at it, and he does a few jobs, one of which is where he is a guy comes to the agency and says, "I'm successful, I'm married, I have a pretty good life, but no one
and
likes
I'm
me.
New in town
but no one likes me, and I want you to figure out why." And so Antoine becomes like a worker at his shoe store to try and work out why people don't like him, and ends up starting sort of like a sordid affair with his with the client's wife, which I'll say it, Richard, very sexy. Very sexy. Very, very sexy.
He stole those kisses right off her lips.
I had what the French call a bonheur watching. and it's sort of like about that. And then, oh God, I loved the ending to this film. I think the ending is like one of my favorite moments in the franchise, and why, like, this is like my last stop for necessarily going all out in my praise for these films.
Right, yeah.
So throughout the movie, it's sort of like the movie is like Christine is kind of unsure about him, and then he tries to go after this other woman and it gets kind of weird. And while this is happening, you keep seeing this mysterious guy like watching Christine, and you think, because it's a private detective movie, that, oh, he must be a private detective hired to like stalk her or whatever. Mm. And at the ending of the film, he realizes that is, you know, Christine is who he really wants to be with. And so they get together, and then they're sitting in a park, and this man is standing across from them, and she's like, "That guy's been following me." And he approaches them, and you're like, "Oh shit, what's he gonna do? And this guy talks directly to Christine, doesn't even acknowledge Antoine, and basically says, "I have been watching you from afar for a while. I am in love with you, and you deserve a proper man. I will devote my life to you. I will give you the life you deserve. You'll never have to lift a finger."
And you were like, "God, I've been that guy.
I've been that guy, Richard." But in a twist of even like, I've never seen something this this relatable, because me being like, I've been that guy in Antoine and Colette, that happens to Antoine. Like, the movie basically ends with like a Black Mirror version of himself, because then he leaves and Antoine and Christine leave, and Christine is like, God, what a weird dude. And like, this dude has poured his heart and soul out. To this dude, this is like 100% of what his life is about. And
this is his AJ moment.
Yeah, and to Christine, she's just like, that was weird. I once heard a story from a friend who said that like she was getting married, and the night before her wedding, her like best guy friend was like, hey, I'm in love with you. Don't marry him. Marry me instead. And for him, this was like the super brave moment where he was just, you know, I can't, I'll never be able to forgive myself if I don't shoot my shot. Like, I've got to try, at least try. To her, it was like, what the fuck? Like, you know, and this is that moment where like Antoine it basically ends with Antoine being like, oh my God. I'm exactly like him.
He is literally me.
And it's the most self-reflective the character gets. yeah. And I, like, God, to have gone through so far and been like, oh my God, I'm so this guy. And then the next movie end with the main character going, oh my God, I'm so this guy. Transformative. Something only the French could pull off.
Yeah.
And what did you think of it outside of all that, though? Did you think it was... Did you like it? It sounds like you didn't really like it that much.
No, this one, to me, was kind of the messiest one.
Okay.
And I think I felt like, yeah, it was just a lot more going on, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I guess also just when I watched it as well. Like, you know, it's a funny thing when you're so used to watching movies like half distracted, and then you're watching a film, you pull out your phone and then go, oh, they're speaking French. Yeah. I have to actively read the subtitles.
Yeah, that
that it's like, yeah, no, you do actually have to pay more attention than your normal. And then also the plot of this one being a bit more convoluted than the other four as well, I found it. A real brain twister to keep up with. But yeah, no, I mean, I this is when the series firmly establishes itself as being like, this is about the guy's love life now.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
And I think that there was, I don't know, there's just something about the franchise that, and for a long time as well, I guess I was trying to work out like, what is new about, like, what's new being said about love in these films? And I guess, yeah, there's the whole thing of like wanting something too much and stuff, but we do sort of get repeated beats throughout the next, from this film and the next two, that's, you know, you get an incredibly flawed character who you're like, God, just fucking don't be so flawed.
Totally. And like, so the next film, which we can move on to now, Bed and Board from 1970. What do you think this has on Rotten Tomatoes?
75.
76. I'm so sorry. That's technically incorrect.
The best kind of incorrect.
Yeah, if Rotten Tomatoes was, it would rate it as incorrect, even though it was so close to correct, because Rotten Tomatoes is a binary. Yeah, so what you just said, I think it came full force in this, because we'll talk about what it's about in a second, but this is a movie where, like, we've talked a couple of times about, like, one of my least favorite things in a movie is when a main character is, like, unfaithful, when they cheat on their partner. Because to me, not to try and make myself sound like the best dude ever, but to me, that's, like, such an ugly, unlikable thing to do that, like, I find it really hard to invest in characters when they do it, right?
Yeah.
Antoine Dwinell, multiple times across these movies, cheats on his partner, including in this one. But this time, it kind of made me like reconsider this bias I have.
Because he's been so literally you up until this point that you're like, fuck, I'd probably do the same thing.
Kind of. That's kind of what I'm saying. I'm more saying, like, knowing so much about this character by this point, it's not like I turned on a random like Netflix comedy that's about like a wacky infidelity. It's like, no,
yeah,
no.
It's just like, this is about love when you hit 30.
I've now seen that, like, the history of this character and how he's, you know, was not raised with positive role models, and how he's like so clearly searching for something that he doesn't really know. And like, I kind of reveled in how this movie is basically a movie about a guy who's just a bit of a dumb slut, and it wrecks his life. It, like, ruins his life by the end. But what is it about? Do you want to give us a quick précis of the plot? Is that a French word? I bet that's French.
How you say précis?
Synopsis.
Synopsis of the film. Yes, in this film, Antoine, they're married now, and they for work he like colors carnations, and sells, you know, colorful things, but
like flowers.
Yeah. We also hear a bit of Antoine speaking English in this film, and boy is his accent hilarious. But yeah, no, they have a baby. And then he meets who they named Ghislaine after Ghislaine Maxwell. Well, they try to name.
She tries to, and he goes to register it and calls him Alphonse instead.
Yeah. And then, he meets this Japanese woman and then starts having an affair. Christine finds out about it and they.
Culturally appropriates Japanese culture to get back at them.
He
enters his house and she's dressed as like a geisha and as a way to be like, I know what you're doing.
Yeah. It kind of evens out their, their flaws. Okay, I've cheated, but like, it's pretty,
this is not cool.
Yeah. But then it flashes forward at the end. So, they split up, but it flashes forward at the end, and it's implied that she's now taking him or is ready to take him back because he just won't leave her alone.
Well, so what I love, because it got to the point where we cheated on her and I was like, Antoine, no, buddy, don't do this. Antoine, no. What I loved is like, he's in love with this. So he gets a new job where he works for like this business run by an American guy, and his job is to remote control boats around like a model harbor. It's real specific and strange. All his jobs in this series are real specific and strange. And during a like trip to Paris, he meets this Japanese woman who's accompanying this Japanese businessman, and she immediately like comes on to him, and he gives in. And then after Christine finds out and he's kicked out of the house, he has no choice but to keep hanging out with this woman. And there's this montage of him like getting really restless, eating foods, like sitting cross-legged on the floor and all this sort of thing. And then they go to dinner together, and he keeps sneaking off to call Christine to be like, Christine, I cannot stand this woman. She is so boring. She keeps ordering more food and we have nothing to talk about. And I was just like, this is great. Right. Like this is like the story it's telling is kind of like, well, you know, you kind of reap what you sow, buddy. And like,
oats.
The 400 Blows provides this context that he's like, oh, maybe he didn't have the best upbringer influences. But I feel like this film is, it says like, you get to an age where you have to take responsibility for some of these things as well. And he's writing a novel throughout this one. And one of the final scenes of the film, when he's walking Christine to her car, she's like, I'm not going to read your novel because I don't want to read about me. And she's like, and I also think you're too harsh to your parents. And she says something like, do you remember the line? It's like, it's not art if it's, let me look it up. I don't like this business of writing about your childhood, dragging your parents through the mud. I don't know much, but one thing I do know, if you use art to settle accounts, it's no longer art. And it's like, fuck, this is like Truffaut, man. Like, this is him grappling with his own, like, life. It's great.
And you're like, fuck, I had that with Romantic Getaway.
I like this thread. This thread of, like, I've never really compared myself to him, but you're like, this thread is AJ compares himself to Truffaut.
No, you're Doinel. You're not Truffaut. Okay.
Yeah. And
you're not Truffaut.
In that same scene, I thought this should have been the last scene of the film, and I was kind of bummed out it wasn't. But in that same scene, she gets into, like, she's basically like, I don't want to see you anymore. She says, do what you have to do, but let me be. I'm not proud and never have been, so I can tell you I still love you, but I'd rather not see you anymore. And she gets into a car, and he says to her, you're my sister, you're my daughter, you're my mother. And she says, I would have liked to be your wife. And I was like, God, that's such good dialogue.
I've said that to women.
No, not at all. But just like it's he's saying, like, and this comes up a lot, is like Antoine, like, is constantly needing mothering and needing people to do things for him. And all the women in his life are like, you fucking man child. I'm not supposed to be this person for you. And God, I'm not necessarily like relating to these things completely, but it's like, there's just so much echoes of truth in all of these films that, I don't know, that really struck a chord more than I realized. Like, peek behind the curtain, as we so often give you guys. We went into this episode and I said to Richard, I barely wrote anything down. Like, there's not a lot of stuff to talk about, and for the sequels anyway. And while talking to you about these, Richard, I'm realizing that, like, I am actually quite a lot more emotionally attached to these stories that and this character than I thought I was. So that's always a fun thing to discuss about yourself. You have any more thoughts on bed and board?
More like bed and board.
I kind of wondered if that's intentional. If it's called bed and board to be like, you know, bed as in sex and board as in board of sex, like board of your wife. I wonder if that's intentional. Or
in French, domicile, how you say, conjugal.
Domicile Conjugal. What a great title. Cool. Well, the final film in the Antoine Doinel series, Richard, for now, came out in 1979. There's still time. Was called Love on the Run. What do you think this has on Rotten Tomatoes?
58%.
Let me tell you how much this has on Rotten Tomatoes with a sound effect. Was that
the
funny?
Sound effect wasn't really picked up by Zoom.
Oh, sorry. this is like, well, you know, on a relatively hot streak, all these movies are like at least well crafted, and then this one I thought was so average. Let me read you my Letterboxd review for it, if you'll indulge me for the 50th time on this episode.
I've done nothing but indulge
AJ, you. Let me indulge myself for once, please. Jesus Christ. My review for this film was, if nothing else, ruining your relatively consistent franchise on the final film is very Antoine Doinel. Like, it is very much like, you know, you're going well, kid. He wanted it too much. And, like, that's pretty true of the behind the scenes of the film as well. But what is Love on the Run about, and why
it's was a only received
by 58% of critics?
So, yeah, it is a clip show, but the, like, this features heavily things from the last four films. But it has Antoine's book of his autobiography, well, semi-autobiography has just been released, and so that's kind of bookending, and that's the reason for all the flashbacks. Christine and his wife, Christine and him have gotten divorced.
Yeah.
And he becomes obsessed with a new girl, essentially, this girl that works at a record store. And so he stalks her now, and then...
But not before stalking Colette, who returns in this film after only... she had a cameo in Stolen Kisses.
And then there's a scene which I really enjoyed of just, like, Christine and Colette just being like...
Yeah.
This guy's so weird.
This guy's so weird, right? No, exactly. It's great.
And then he at the end of the film, he reveals to Sabine, who's the new girl, that he stalked her, and she's like, oh, oh my God.
That's so French. She loves it. I know I just said I really liked that part of it, but, like, this movie is, like, I read somewhere it's 30% material from the previous four films, including the short film that I, you know, how many people, maybe it was really popular, but it seems like it's kind of like a hidden story in the whole franchise. And it's not just like flashes, like it just plays the greatest hits. Like it plays full, like that whole scene from Bed and Board that I just praised where Christine says, I would have liked to be your wife. That whole conversation is
which, repeated. Tell you what, was great for, you know, keep me up to date and getting me refreshed for the podcast.
Yeah, if only every final film in a franchise just reminded us of what had happened in the first few films, of the
talking points for the film franchise Hornets.
So there's a bit in this where he's talking to Colette and he's telling her about this novel he's writing about a guy who is eavesdropping on a dude yelling at someone on a payphone, and then he rips up a photo and then leaves, and then the main character puts the photo back together and it's this beautiful woman that he falls instantly in love with.
She's gorgeous.
And I was like, this is cool. I wish this was what the movie was. And then, of course, it turns out that it's actually a true story and that this is... Sabine. And she is gorgeous. She's played by someone who only goes by Dorothy. And
she's a musician.
I looked her up because I was like, this woman is so beautiful. I want to look at pictures of her. I thought she was so gorgeous. What did you think of this film? Because I thought it was a bit of a letdown.
Yeah, I don't know. I genuinely I did like that it reminded me of the greatest hits, and I think more than anything, I really liked bringing Christine and Colette together.
Mm. Well, I agree, and I think
that was like, oh, cool, this is why this film exists.
I really like the idea of someone in a sequel writing a novel based on the experiences of the previous films and then having the woman he wrote about read it and be like, you fucking slime ball, that's not how it happened. And like, I don't know, it's something I think about, like, you know, like people talk about like when you get to heaven and you see like the stats of your life, like how many shits I took or whatever, or who had a crush on me that I never knew about. Like, I've kind of fantasized, I think, sometimes about like the woman who have affected me most in my life reading my like honest thoughts on them, or you know, like I think it was kind of what this is a very self-indulgent movie, but that's one area where I think
that's Doinal, baby.
As the one area where I think the self-indulgence like really worked.
I also think that like finding a picture of a beautiful girl and then door knocking across all of Paris is such an AJ thing to do.
maybe AJ from 5 years ago. I don't know. Cynical old AJ would do that now. The weirdest part of the clip show format is when it will... To explain better, like he'll be like, ah, it's like Family Guy. He'll be like, I remember the time that I did this.
This was like the time I googled the 400 blows, and it cuts to him like being chased by a biplane.
The weirdest part about it though is when it'll randomly flash to a scene that isn't from a previous Antoine Doinel film. Like there's this funny scene where his son is like being smart to him, and that's just a fresh new scene made for this movie. Like it's not, but it's treated as if it was just another one of these, some of which are in black and white, by the way, and one of them is from Stolen Kisses, but is black and white in the movie for some reason. Like even though there's clips from Bed and Board that aren't black and white, there's one bit where there's a flashback to a person you've never heard of, a woman called Lillianne, that's not even from an Antoine Doinel movie. It's a clip from Day for Night, another François Truffaut movie, which also starred Jean-Pierre Lourdes and a character named Lillianne. So it's like using other... It's so weird, like, to be so devoted to this kind of, like, inherently weaker storytelling device, and they'd be like, and I love it so much that I'll even do it with a movie that wasn't part of the series. What did you think of Colette's story being so fucking miserable out of nowhere? She's just like sort of happy-go-lucky the whole time, and then someone's like, what happened to that daughter? Because you see her with a daughter in her cameo in Stolen Kisses, and she's like, oh, she got hit by a car and my husband left me because we couldn't resolve it together. And it's like, fuck.
I think that, you know, she got what was coming to her.
Yeah, this is the nastier side of Truffaut coming.
I mean, like, I think that's what should happen to women who friendzone men.
Yeah, that's probably true. You're probably right. Mm. Truffaut's assistant director, Suzanne Schiffman, thought that the film should either end with Doinel's death or reveal that we are watching a film within a film, and at the end we cut and Jean-Pierre Lourdes starts playing himself, revealing that the whole series has been Jean-Pierre Lourdes playing himself, and the idea being this would effectively be killing off Dwanel in a more philosophical sense, in the sense that he's not a real person. Which is interesting at first until you think about it for a bit longer and you go, well, that's just what real life is. That's just what it is. Like, if the plot twist was that you're actually watching a movie, it's like, yeah, I knew I was watching a movie.
That's the twist when the credits roll.
But Truffaut himself had serious doubts about Love on the Run. He stated, I'm not terribly happy with the script of Love on the Run, which I start shooting in 2 weeks. He wrote to film scholar and friend Annette Ischdorf and said, the novelty will be having real flashbacks to the other films, but in trying to integrate them smoothly, we've come up with a wishy-washy script that will be very difficult to improve. Obviously, I'm going to do my utmost, but we'll have to give some good scenes to Maureen Fraser Pizier, who played Colette, Claude Jade, and who played Christine, and especially Jean-Pierre, and it's not easy. And the woman who played Colette later said, Francois hated this project very early on, but still he went ahead with it. Filming began in the end of May and was finished in early July, but because of the complicated ending that the flashbacks entailed, the movie was not released until 1979, so it released 6 months after they had locked cut, basically. So how, like, man, to you know, you're this director who everyone is like, this is one of the best dudes in the business, you make this like passionate autobiographical story that's like self-critical and like super interesting, and then you start the final film in the series and you're 2 weeks before shooting and be like, I'm ruining this, I'm fucking this up, and I have no choice but to keep going with it. I think that's pretty interesting, and again something that I feel like is going to happen to me one day, if not already.
I in my head I was like, what's the funniest $1 genre film to say that you felt this about?
Well, probably Mystery Box, the prequel, because that was like a prequel to one of the better ones, and I don't think it's terrible, but I don't think it lives up to the charm of the original. And that's a strange thing to just look within yourself and see and be like, damn, I made a bad prequel.
Wow.
Bad, quote unquote.
Yeah, it's interesting that talking about like that, they obviously planned, oh, we'll do one with flashbacks, and I guess that's a bit of a, there would have been no sort of home video at the time. So if you wanted to see any of, you know,
that's true.
Truth.
Well, that's initially what I thought was the point of the whole series, was like, no one's seen this on home video, so we just do another story. But yeah.
Yeah. There is a scene, I think it's in Bed and Board, where he looks in the mirror and says, Antoine Doinel, like 50 times. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, you know, there's a pronunciation guide.
Did you have anything else you wanted to say about any of these movies, the character, Francois Truffaut?
When did Truffaut die?
I don't know.
It was 1984.
Oh, okay.
Yes, yes. But it's interesting to hear that they, because I mean that's like, oh, they, you know, they would have stopped because he died, but they that they very much sounds like they went into that one knowing it was going to be the last one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they went, it was 9 years after the previous one, and for a long time he didn't want to make another one anyway. Well, Richard, now we're going to move on to a segment called Continue the Franchise, where we pitch continuations to the franchise. There's really nothing of note. There's no, you know, extracurricular material with Antoine Doinel. And I'm going to take the easy one. Jean-Pierre Lourdes is still alive. He looks very different in his 70s to the handsome young man he was in his 20s and 30s. But, you know, let's bring him back for a Super Bowl commercial campaign.
Was going to say a Super Bowl commercial campaign.
I'm so sorry.
Because we just watched Ferris Bueller.
Yeah.
And like the idea of like, how they do Super Bowl commercials.
Yeah.
Of like, oh, he's back. But like, you know, a freeze frame of this like unrecognizable 70-something year old French man, a still frame of him on the beach.
Yeah.
And it's like, tune into the Super Bowl.
I think that could count as two separate ideas. But I don't know, I guess like just him still being alive.
Or doing the death of Antoine Doinel.
Yeah, yeah. I guess him just still being alive is fascinating, and I wonder what he thinks of this series now and how it affected his career.
It'd be funny to do, like, the death of Antoine Doinel, and he's on his deathbed, and the whole movie is just, like, a row of women coming to his bedside and, like, airing their grievances with him.
Being like, you were so weird, dude.
Yeah, it's just woman after woman after woman being like, I was never the same after we dated. Like, I,
you made me a worse person, and that's not to say I didn't try with you, because I did. Yeah. Cool. Well, now we're going to move on to Ranked at Franchise. Richard, your favorite segment of the show.
I forgot about the segment.
You will not shut up about the segment. And sometimes I'll be like, sweet, we're done. And you're like, no, I want to rank it. Mm. You go, oh, I peed my little pants and I want to rank the franchise. So where are we ranking 400 Blows? I think it should probably go kind of high. I don't know. I think it's rare that we see, like, even though there's like kind of inconsistent stuff in some of the later ones, I feel that like this is not unfairly compared to Three Colors or Before Trilogy, which we've put quite high up.
I reckon it's better than The Hunger Games, but not as good as Planet of the Apes.
Where's Hunger Games?
23.
Okay, so you think it should be at the new 24?
New 23.
The new 23. So better than Planet of the Apes?
No.
Okay. So if I put it in place of The Hunger Games, it becomes 23. You're right. So that puts it above Hunger Games, below Planet of the Apes, below The Terminator, below Lord of the Rings. And, you know, if it weren't for that last film, God, did I really enjoy Ip Man more than the 400 Blows? I feel like I didn't. But if it weren't for that last film, I think I'd put it up quite a lot higher. But in a franchise which is so franchise core, it would be disingenuous to not consider each and every film in the series as like a hefty fraction of its quality, which is what we should be doing for all of these. But then you look at where we place Jaws and it's like, well, clearly we forgot the rules for Jaws because the franchise Jaws.
None of this is important.
Richard, we now have to do something that is your least favorite section of the show. It's a little, it's what the French call franchise roulette, which I believe is a French word.
Yeah, franchise Colette.
Oh. And this is where we have a big list of franchises that we will one day cover. And we draw a random number, and that'll tell us what the franchise is. Richard, I believe it is my turn to make you guess.
It is. I did put my phone in the other room, though, so I'm going to generate it on Google.
Oh, can we still 76.
Hear it? 76.
I feel bad when we can't. When it's we can't hear a third party saying the number.
Well, it's 76 is the number. I don't know what you would do.
76, Richard. 76 is a franchise we have wanted to cover for a while, I believe.
Oh wow.
It has four films and a remake.
Four films and a remake.
Mm-hmm. So five films total.
So presumably the remake came out after the original.
Yes, but there has since been a continue the franchise post-remake that returns to the original continuity.
Nice. It's not Evil Dead. No. So we covered that several years ago.
This continue the franchise is something you have really wanted to watch.
Oh, Karate Kid.
It's Karate Kid. We got Karate Kid. So tune in next fortnight and we will be discussing the Karate Kid quintology.
Yeah, because both of us have wanted to watch. We're just so fascinated by how good everyone says Cobra Kai is.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe we'll watch it and be like, damn, I gotta watch Cobra Kai. I think what's more likely is you'll watch one episode and be like, it's pretty good, and then you'll never watch another episode again. And I will be I will completely forget that I liked the series after watching it and never check it out.
There's also a new Karate Kid coming out next year.
Wow. Always hustling. Always making future-proofing plans for film franchise follow-ups. Cool. So tune in for that next time, and we'll see you guys there. Let's get out of here. If you want to If you want to support Cold Popture, you can do so by liking us on Twitter and Instagram at Cold Popture. You can also join the Discord, which there'll be a link to in the show notes. Come and tell us how our opinions on Antoine Dwanel are so just fucking wrong, and we're bad people for thinking those things. Or tell us that we're attractive. Or ask for that meme I made. Do. And if you want as well, you can contribute to the Patreon, whereas for little as a dollar a month, you can decide every second franchise that we watch. And there's a whole bunch of other stuff. You get two extra exclusive podcasts a month, and you also get to contribute to the post-credit scene, which is coming at you right after this music ends. Richard, au revoir. Au revoir. Au revoir. Au revoir.
Arrivederci.
Welcome along to the post-credit scene. This is a segment at the end of each episode where if you give us $5 or more over at patreon.com/coldpopture, you get to give us something to talk about in this, the post-credit scene. Richard, every time I say that memorized spiel, whenever I say something to talk about, I'm reminded of one of my favorite films of all time called About a Boy, directed by our best friend, Chris Weitz, and his brother. Because the artist Badly Drawn Boy did the original soundtrack for that movie. And the titular song, the chorus goes, "Ooh, something to talk about." And it just takes me back to how much.
166 post-credit scenes it took you to mention that.
I've actually sung it before, but I've never brought up why I sang it.
So Benjamin Adams asks, if one of you had to switch with the worst idea of all time, guys, who would it be and why? This means Guy or Tim would have to join Cult Popture, and Richard or AJ would have to join Worst Idea of All Time. Which combo and which podcast would be the best?
I think me and Guy would be the best because it would keep me on my fucking toes because I cannot match that dude's comedic, like fast-paced sensibilities. Whereas I think you and Richard would similarly...
Sorry, Tim.
You and Tim would similarly provide a dynamic that is... Here's what it is, and Guy and Tim have said this themselves, that you're the Guy of the podcast and I'm the Tim of the podcast. So I'm thinking, therefore...
Yeah. I think if I was doing a podcast together, but I think I'm too intimidated by Tim to be like...
Intimidated? That could be the name of
the
podcast.
Yeah, that would be what the podcast would be called.
Richly, intimidatingly rich.
Tim, if you're listening.
AJ Guy. It seems today that all you see...
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.